Chapter 14. Provis's Story.
I can tell you the bulk of my life quickly, Provis said. In jail, out of jail. In jail, out of jail. I begged, I stole, and I worked when I could. Then I grew to be a man. I worked a bit more often and saw less time in jail.
Provis told us he then met Arthur Compeyson, who was good-looking and a smooth talker. Compeyson had gotten great wealth through some trick he'd played on a woman who loved him. Compeyson was not a man to hold on to wealth long. He chose Provis as the man to help him gain more wealth. Together they swindled, forged, and took people's money in all ways short of bashing them on the head.
Finally, we both were caught and tried for one of our crimes, Provis said. Compeyson's lawyer begged the jury to see it was all me, and his client should not be punished.
They had both been sent to the prison ship, but with far different treatment. Provis plotted to get close to Compeyson. He attacked him for lying during the trial. Provis was thrown in the hold for it, but he managed to escape and swim for shore.
I'd have made good my escape, the old man muttered, but when you told me Compeyson was in the marshes, my freedom didn't matter to me, only that he not be let free.
Where is Compeyson now? I asked.
I don't know, Provis said. Dead, I hope. If not, I'm sure he hopes me dead.
And with that, the older man settled back, his eyes closed. Herbert handed me a scrap of paper. I opened it and read, Compeyson was the name of Miss Havisham's betrothed. He left her on her wedding day. I became desperate to remove Provis from London. First, I was determined to see Estella and Miss Havisham. I learned Estella was visiting Miss Havisham, and I left Provis in Herbert's charge to go see them both. I arrived early in the morning and stopped at the inn for breakfast. I was annoyed to see Drummle there. I knew he must have come following Estella. Indeed, he took great pains to mention to the staff at the inn that he would be dining at the young lady's home. Finally, Drummle left. I saw him exchange words with a tattered man. The man looked a great deal like Orlick, but I assumed it was my imagination. Finally, the morning grew late enough to call upon Miss Havisham's house. I was certain they knew about my mysterious benefactor, but I spoke of it anyway.
Letting me believe you were my benefactor was unkind, I told Miss Havisham.
When have you ever known me to be kind? She answered.
I shrugged that off. You have a chance to be kind, I said. I will tell you now that your relatives, Herbert Pocket and his father, are not like the others. They do not scheme or covet. It would do you well to think of them differently. She seemed to accept this, so I turned to Estella. I love you, I said. I am soon to be poor and have no claim to love you, yet I do. I need for you to know that. Estella said she could not love me. She could not love anyone. Then she said the worst thing I could imagine. I am going to be married to Bentley Drummle. Nothing I said seemed to make a dent in her purpose. When I insisted he could not love her, she said that she could not love him either, and that seemed fair. I wept, I pleaded, but nothing would change her mind. As I lay, my broken heart open before them, I saw deep pity in Miss Havisham's face. I believe she began to face what she had done with Estella's upbringing. I left the house and set to walk the entire 25 miles to London. I could not bear the company of another person in my pain. As I grew close to home, a watchman stopped me and pressed a note in my hand. I opened it and found Wemmick's writing plainly formed. Don't go home.